T-minus 5. Council Office, Great Shelter, New Kerguelen.
Now this is more like it, Billy said, gawping in amazement as Leisha led him into New Kerguelen's council office. The walls were the same as Dan remembered, with his recurring description of 50% floral wallpaper, 50% tribal tattoos, still seeming as appropriate today as it had when he first set eyes on the decorative designs. Artwork was surely the word, with Terra at his side. The smooth sleekness of every other surface Billy had seen so far only heightened the impact this incredible artwork had on Billy, who felt true joy as he began to take it all in. Having spent much of his professional life trying to locate and unearth basic artwork representing anything remotely resembling something alien, be it a being or a craft, standing before a mural designed by aliens was almost too much to handle.
This is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, he mused, still utterly entranced by one particular section directly in front of the door.
Dan, have you seen this part with the—
Sit down, a silent voice replied, cutting him off. The words came in Billy's own mental accent, as they always did, but something about the way they came, with a sharpness that went far beyond word choice, immediately told him they weren't Leisha's. Upon turning to his left, Billy had his suspicion confirmed with the sight of Sacco, the messenger who had never been away from Leisha's side during their visits to Earth prior to Leisha's long solo stay. As the two senior members of the messenger's premier cast, the interpreters, Leisha and Sacco had been the entire race's de facto decision makers for an unknown but very long time. The death of their elders had majorly shaken things up, but when New Kerguelen needed leadership, Dan and Terra had successfully convinced the Planetary Council's other members that Leisha and Sacco were still the duo to provide it. The fact that Sacco was sitting at one end of the now familiar table and Leisha was approaching the other suggested that their joint leadership remained unquestioned, but the tone of Sacco's request led both Dan and Billy to hope that Leisha would have the final say in any unforeseen disputes. Not many humans would have been able to tell which messenger was which out of Sacco and Leisha, unless they were standing right next to each other. Side by side, the main distinguishing feature was that Leisha's eyes were slightly closer together, but Billy had rewatched every second of recorded footage of the messengers enough times to know that the one he now knew as Leisha, who Dan relayed had always been the one to take the lead in communicating with humans on Earth via attempted gestures as well as telepathic speech, had eyes that were a little bit lighter in color.
Fun ri bas. Sacco, Leisha said, singing the words into the air in the gentle form of vocalization Dan hadn't heard in so long.
Sacco didn't reply in kind, instead speaking directly to Dan and Billy.
Please, sit down.
The tone was slightly softer than before, but still seemed designed to give the humans a firm indication of who was in charge. While the only two interpreters in the room had been having a rapid conversation about how to speak to their guests, Billy's visual attention had turned to the other messengers seated around the table. The sight of five more aliens, each wearing a differently colored tunic to signal the specialized caste to which they belonged, awed Billy in a very different way than the artwork which had initially prevented him from noticing that the room wasn't empty. For one of the first times in his life, Billy Kendrick was truly lost for words. Even his thoughts were gibberish, as picked up by the interpreters, which prompted Leisha to reassure him that everything would be discussed at a pace he was comfortable with. None of the other messengers said anything to Billy as their eyes stared into his, but he couldn't yet be sure which of them were incapable of doing so and which simply chose not to. This seemed like one of the things that would be discussed, so he took a seat in one of the two remaining empty chairs without delay.
Dan, welcome back, Sacco said, seemingly persuaded by Leisha to be cordial and now signaling to the other chair with an open hand. How is the child?
Leisha looked at Dan, as if to inquire whether he wanted to say it or would rather delegate.
She has the core uplift powers?
Dan blurted out, keen to get it out there before he overthought it. These aliens were on his side and were going to have to find out at some point. There was no way he could smuggle a suitable device from New Kerguelen to Earth without their knowledge, even if they hadn't been able to read his mind, so stating the crux of his problem right from the start made a lot of sense in his mind.
She had them at birth, Leisha added, for his part keen to let Sacco know from the outset that he hadn't been crazy enough to grant the uplift powers to a human baby.
Hook yourself up, Sacco requested, gesturing again towards the table.
Dan followed the instruction, glad that this time he was able to sit at the table with Billy rather than have to stand on it as he had with Tara. As in New York, Billy and Dan proceeded to attach the adhesive patch and one end of a thin cable to their fingertips, and as in New York, the other end was attached to the table itself. Only this time, the other participants in the upcoming conversation were far from human. Unlike during his last visit, Dan would not be speaking without reply. In fact, as it turned out, he would barely be speaking at all. Leisha, reunited with his fellow council members for the first time in several months, and yet neither receiving nor giving any platitudinal greetings, immediately took it upon himself to relay what he considered to be the most important things to have happened on Earth since his departure. This didn't take long, and he delivered the rundown so succinctly that it was as though he was reading it from an auto cue. To his credit, he didn't dodge the issue of his regrettable action in Buenos Aires, which Dan and Billy could now see that he truly did regret. There was no reaction of any kind from the others at any stage of Leisha's rundown, as Dan had experienced last time when discussing issues as important as a hostile squadron force being recalled from Earth, and as Billy was seeing now, the messengers were remarkably unemotional during discussions of any kind. Dan felt like that was an important qualifier, however, because both Leisha and Sacco had quite expressively shown all kinds of feelings in the time he'd known them, but rarely, if ever, while talking about things. They were very visual, very experiential, and seemingly very able to detach the abstract from the actual and the past from the present. This had perhaps been best highlighted by the carving at Dortlutepe, which had interested Leisha when he heard about it, but which had positively stunned him when he saw Billy's footage. When he mentioned this, right at the end of his full recap, given that it was the last significant thing to have happened during his extended time on Earth, Sacco immediately asked if Billy had the images with him. Billy produced the memory stick from his pocket. The seven aliens around the table leaned forward like cats following a laser pointer, all of their eyes taking in every aspect of the small and novel object. Still, the only messengers who pseudo-verbally communicated with the humans were Leisha and Sacco. It was so easy to tell which was talking that Dan didn't have to think about it, but he would never have been able to explain how. Assuming that one of the other aliens was an expert in interspecies communication, as he'd been promised, Dan hoped to leave New Kerguelen with a far greater understanding than he had now. He didn't want to hang around any longer than necessary, though, given the level and urgency of his drive to cure Piper, and fortunately he was learning that the messengers didn't beat around the bush in their conversations as powerful humans too often did. Within a few seconds of showing everyone the memory stick, Billy had it back in his pocket. They had seen all there was to see of it, and had no technology similar to the screen in New York's table room, Leisha said, so unfortunately it seemed as though the others would have to imagine the long, skulled giant of an alien until such a time as humans returned with something like a computer or TV.
Wait, Billy exclaimed. The crew, they must have had computers I could plug this into. Did you seize all of their equipment?
Seize was a stronger word than Dan would have liked, but he found himself desperately hoping that the next word he heard would be yes.
Yes, Sacco said.
Can you take me to it?
Billy pushed.
You could show me their photos of the second shelter while we're there. Is one of these guys your planetary historian? Because he should come too. Or she, I guess.
I will take you soon, Sacco said, bringing a smile to Billy's face.
And is one of them your comms expert? Dan interjected, looking around at the essentially identical-looking messengers in their differently colored tunics. Aside from the all-white interpreters, the only other he could identify was the sky-blue squadron member.
Because that's why I'm here.
I requested your assistance before I knew of your need, Leisha replied to Dan. The discovery of the second shelter has caused fear and concern among some of our kind, and we hope your presence can calm that. I was told by the mothership's crew that some members of our council opposed Sacco's desire to visit the second shelter as soon as possible, and I hoped you would be able to help convince them of the value of exploration, and to also convince the more fearful elements of our population that this second shelter poses us no threat. As when you and Terra were here last, in the absence of our elders, your word will carry great weight.
Hearing so overtly that humans, and particularly he and Terra, really were pedestaled in the minds of the messengers gave Dan pause. He considered himself honest and decent, but as any of his friends or family would attest, at the end of the day, he was just a guy. He had stumbled into the spotlight and had responsibility thrust upon him, and despite the undeniable fact that he had handled it all with dignity and integrity, it sometimes felt like far too much. He felt like he was carrying the kind of great weight the messengers ascribed to his words, and dearly hoped to achieve something on this visit that could alleviate it for good.
Planetary historian is a specialist position held by an individual who is not a member of the council, Sacco replied. And Dan, I believe I am the communications expert you allude to. In your quest to spare your child from a life with the uplift powers, I can guide you through the processes and devices with which I am more familiar than anyone else here. In the absence of our elders, however, my knowledge is decidedly incomplete. I cannot guarantee success in any method, but I will do everything I can.
Dan could have cried in relief, and would have done if he wasn't so overwhelmed with everything that was going on. The one messenger who could help him more than any other was one of the two he knew best, one of the two who clearly liked him and wanted what was best for him beyond any transactional quid pro quo arrangement. His trip could scarcely have gotten off to a better start.
However, I can do much of that work on Earth, Sacco continued. For now, our second shelter is the focus. I agree with Leisha that a team should venture there immediately. We are now all but certain that the air outside is safe for our kind and yours, but access to the second shelter can in any case naturally come without traversing the intervening distance.
By teleporting? Billy asked. Sacco nodded, almost Leisha-esque.
But before we turn our full focus to this exploration, which is now the only thing that will quell the rampant speculation among our kind, and before we leave the communications issue aside for the day. Dan, Leisha mentioned that you have brought along a device of your own?
Oh, yeah, Dan said, reaching down to pick up his small bag. He lifted out the Greater X 3000, feeling more than a little foolish for having brought it, and just like Billy's memory stick, it drew interested looks from the quiet counselors. I don't think it's going to do anything, but people on Earth have been going crazy trying to get hold of these things because there are rumors that they block telepathy. As he trailed off, Dan placed the Greater X 3000 on his head. It felt decidedly bulky, thanks to the battery pack, and certainly outdated in design, even though it still held its own in terms of functionality.
I can still hear your thoughts perfectly, Sacco said.
Dan flicked the switch to the on position. How about now?
Still?
Unsurprised, but still a little disappointed, Dan turned to Billy. After removing the cable's adhesive patch from his finger, he then arranged his in the activation position and encouraged Billy to do the same. Billy repeated the process, seeing where Dan was going, but the very brief telepathic conversation that followed was enough to prove once and for all that the Greater X 3000 did not block so-called telepathic intrusion. Quite why any part of him ever thought a radio could do such a thing was beyond Dan in this moment, so he shook the thoughts aside. When he flicked the off switch, however, a sudden burst of audio input almost sent him falling to the ground. Fortunately, the chair was heavy enough to stop him, although Leisha was already at his side checking that he was okay. Dan nodded. He had ripped the device from his head instantly and could still hear echoes of the constant static-like sound. Upon examining the Greater X, he noticed something that went some way to explaining it. He hadn't flicked the switch to off, after all. Rather, after instructing the Greater X to transmit a signal he had hoped might block telekinetic eavesdropping, He had accidentally flicked the switch past off and all the way to the receive mode used for picking up radio signals. The fourth option, chat, lay on the other side of transmit and enabled the long-range walkie-talkie functionality that had made the small device popular among people like Phil Norris even before the rumor mill went haywire. "I had it on radio mode," he explained to Billy. "Apparently, for some reason, that makes it go crazy up here." Billy held his hand out to take a closer look at the device, and Dan handed it over right away. "Volume is way up, too," Billy said. "Though it's not that it's going crazy up here, it's just being a radio. Even at home, if you tune into a random frequency and turn the volume up, you're either going to hear a loud burst of some bad music or a louder burst of some worse static." "No music today," Dan said with a slight sigh. He took the device back, placed it in radio mode again, then significantly lowered the volume and placed it back on his head. "Just like white noise," he shrugged, moving the tuning dial on the opposite side from the volume control and hearing nothing but white noise on every frequency. But very suddenly, his finger stopped. Because on one frequency, there was something else.